Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rounding Third Sports. I'm your host, Steve, and let's get started. So I am back now. I took a week off for Thanksgiving, and typically Thursday is my record day. Being a holiday, being away, I needed to take the week and spend it with family. I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. Hope you got to spend it with those that you love and care about. Whether it's family, whether it's friends, I know people do a lot of different things around this holiday. So hope you got to do exactly what you wanted to do. Hope you got to eat a lot of food and enjoy all of that. I did. I am so thankful for the time I got to spend with some family. But now I'm back, and there's a lot to catch up on. It has been a week of sports, if I can say that. And we're going to talk about a lot of it. I'm going to try to talk about as much of it as I can. Obviously, you probably know everything that's happened, but I'm going to go into detail a little bit, give my thoughts as I always do. But we'll talk about Major League Baseball. We'll talk a little bit about the lockout. We'll talk about the free agency that, you know, the short time that we did have a free agency and some crazy deals that actually happened in that short time frame. We'll look at my NFL picks for the last 2 weeks, see how I've been doing. We'll look at this week's games, talk about those. I do want to look at the draft order currently because I did see the projected or the current draft order if the season ended now. I'll talk about that here in a little bit. We'll look at the ACC Big Ten Challenge in college basketball, talk a little bit more about some games that have been played in the past 2 weeks now. And then, of course, we're going to talk college football. Obviously, last week was rivalry week, so a lot of big games, some great games, some I'd prefer not to talk much about, but I will, because what kind of sports podcast would this be if I didn't talk about it? We'll look at the current playoff rankings, and then we're going to spend some time talking about these coaching changes. The coaching carousel has officially taken off. Get on board now while you can, because, man, it's speeding up quick. And so we'll talk about that as well. So as I've been doing, I'm going to jump right into it, start off with the NFL and look at my picks. So for those that remember, the last three weeks, literally week 8, 9, and 10, I had 9 wins correct. I was 9-6, 9-5, 9-5 in those last 3 weeks. So I was trying to break that 9-win streak. I was trying to get more, and I did. Week 11 was a very good week for me. I went 11-4 that week, and actually correctly predicted Thursday night, Sunday night, and Monday night football games. So I had a really good week. That's a 73.3% correct picks. But then I took a little turn last week. I was 8-7 last week, so 53% correct. Again, I did pick Thursday night and Sunday night correctly, but I did miss the Monday night matchup. Never would have guessed that would have been the outcome of that game. So for the season, I'm still at a 63.33% correct picks. I'm 114-66 currently through this season, through week 12. So let's look a little bit at what happened. So some surprising games, some not so surprising games. Week 11 saw Indianapolis upset Buffalo. I did not see that coming. Jonathan Taylor had himself a game, and you know, he is turning out to be one of the best running backs in the NFL. Not just a young player, but straight up in the NFL. So Buffalo bounces back though in week 12 and absolutely obliterates New Orleans on Thanksgiving night. The Dolphins, hey folks, the Dolphins are on a 4-game win streak. You know, looking at where they were 1-7 in last place in the division, and they currently sit at 5-7, and they're only 2.5 games out of second place. And I mean, they still have, you know, this week they host the Giants. Then after their bye week, they host the Jets. I mean, they could make a surprising run here if they keep this up. But a surprising four-game win streak. The Patriots also, man, the Patriots are on a 6-game win streak with wins at the Chargers, home against Cleveland, and then a big win this past week against Tennessee. I mean, and they now sit atop the division. For 2 weeks in a row, they've been leading the division. First time this season. So, and they are a half a game ahead of Buffalo. And obviously they have their bye week next week, but a big game this week. They go to Buffalo Monday night. So, man, this is a big Monday night football game here. Preseason, I predicted Buffalo to win this game. So we'll see how it plays out. But first place is up for grabs here in this game. So we will see what happens. And then the Jets got a win at Houston last week. Before that, we're on a 3-game losing streak against some pretty decent teams. So looking at the AFC North, the Ravens, you know, after having that embarrassing loss at Miami, came back and they've won the last two games at Chicago and home against Cleveland. But they're only scoring 16 points a game right now. Like the last two games, literally 16-13, 16-10. They're not going to win the division that way. I can tell you that much. Now this week they go to Pittsburgh. Shouldn't be any problem there. Pittsburgh's a mess right now. But Baltimore, you know, still has Green Bay. They go to Cincinnati and they have the Rams in 3 straight weeks coming up. So some big games there still in the North to decide the rest of the season. The Bengals also on a 2-game win streak coming out of their bye, and they host the Chargers this week. The Browns, they're pretty much just the Browns. They lost to Baltimore last Sunday night. They have their bye week, and then they go to Baltimore, or then they host Baltimore the following week. And then Pittsburgh, like I said, Pittsburgh's on a 2-game losing streak. Realistically, you could say they're on a 3-game losing streak. They tied Detroit. Detroit hasn't officially won a game, and they tied. So I would say this is a 3-game losing streak, but this starts that stretch. If anybody remembers in my NFL prediction episode, I talked about this stretch starting in week 11. I predicted 6 straight weeks of losses for Pittsburgh. These are games at the Chargers, at Cincinnati, home against Baltimore, at Minnesota, home against Tennessee, and then at Kansas City. And I projected them to lose all 6 of those games. So far I'm 2-for-2. We'll see how the rest of this plays out, but the way they've been playing, I definitely think this is feasible. So we'll see. Let's see. In the standings, you know, Baltimore's up by 1 game over Cincinnati right now. The two of them don't play again until week 16, so there's some time for this to kind of flesh itself out before then, but we'll see. That could be a very important game. Over in the South, let's see, Houston with the big win over Tennessee, at Tennessee in week 11, and then they turn around and lose to the Jets. So Houston is still a mess. Well, they've only won 2 games, so that tells you all you really need to know there. The Colts also upset Buffalo and then lose a close game to Tampa Bay. So that was one I actually predicted a win at the beginning of the season over Tampa Bay. I thought the Colts could have been the team to upset Tampa, which turned out not to happen. Jacksonville, 2 straight losses. San Fran and Atlanta. I'm upset with myself again because this is the second time in the last few weeks where I had preseason have predicted the Falcons, my Falcons, to lose to teams that I shouldn't have predicted them to lose to. A few weeks ago, it was Miami and the Falcons ended up winning. This week against Jacksonville, I predicted Jacksonville to win. What am I doing? I honestly, I didn't have a lot of faith in the Falcons this season. And, you know, for good reason. But But yeah, they end up beating Jacksonville like they should have. But in my predictions was incorrect. And then the Titans, a rough 2 weeks losing to Houston and then losing at New England. Again, only scoring 13 points in each of those games. That's rough. It's going to be hard to win a division in that manner. They're still up two games in the division over Indianapolis. But again, Indianapolis is playing very good. So, you know, this could turn into quite a race here. Out in the West, the Broncos with the upset over the Chargers this past week was a big deal. The Chiefs beating Dallas in week 11. The Raiders have played iffy. I mean, the past several weeks, they pulled out an overtime win on Thanksgiving at Dallas. And then the Chargers with the win over Pittsburgh, then the loss at Denver is questionable. But right now, I mean, this division is terrible. I'm just going to come right out and say it. The Chiefs lead the division at 7-4. All three of the other teams are 6-5. Nobody wants to win this division. Nobody wants to go to the playoffs in this division. It's a joke. It really is. And I really don't see that changing. Kansas City has a light enough schedule to where they should easily win this division. They close after their bye last week, they close out the season at home against Denver and the Raiders. And then they go to the Chargers. They're home against Pittsburgh. They go to the Bengals and they go to Denver. So you realistically, you only have two really tough games there, and that's at the Chargers and at Cincinnati. The rest of those should be easy wins for them. So if they won out, that's six more games. Or I'm sorry, if they won out, but let's say they win four of the six. That puts them at 10-7. That's still a decent, or I'm sorry. No, I'm talking about Kansas City. I was looking at the wrong team. So they win four. I put them at 11-6. So still a decent record. Should be enough to win the division. But definitely not what I expected from Kansas City this season. All right, over in the NFC. Dallas losing to Kansas City and to the Raiders was rough. The Giants losing to Tampa makes sense, but then beating Philly. So I don't know what to make of the Giants. I still don't think they're much to really make of. Same thing with the Eagles. They beat New Orleans pretty handily, but then lose to the Giants. And then Washington. Hey, Washington's on a three-game win streak with wins against Tampa Bay, at Carolina, and at home on Monday Night Football against Seattle. Now, Seattle's not that good this season, but those are three pretty good wins. And that's got Washington sitting two games out of first place. And with the way Dallas has been playing lately, Washington could make a comeback here. Not to mention the team still they haven't played yet this season. So they still have two games against Dallas. So Dallas holds a two-game lead in that division. But again, they're two-game losing streak. Like they're struggling. Over in the North, Chicago doing pretty much what is expected. They lost to Baltimore, beat Detroit. Detroit's losing games still. Green Bay losing to Minnesota really isn't a shocker. And then beating the Rams, that's kind of a shocking game, but not terribly. But right now, Green Bay leads the division by 3.5 games. So, I mean, there's really no competition there. Over in the South, I've already talked about the Falcons. The Panthers, I mean, the Panthers are what the Panthers are. The Saints, man, the Saints are on a four-game losing streak. So, I mean, they host Dallas on Thursday night. So hopefully they can turn that around a little bit for their sake. And then the Buccaneers, they go to Atlanta and then host Buffalo after that. So, Tampa Bay up three games in the division right now. Atlanta, I mean, I can't really say sneaking up into that second place spot because they're 5-6. There's not really much to sneak up with there. And then out in the West, Arizona losing to Carolina. Oh, I talked about that one last week, but beating Seattle and then on the bye this past week. The Rams already talked about, the 49ers. Seattle losing three straight is tough. Also three pretty tough games, though. So Arizona sits at 9-2, up two games on the Rams. San Francisco's quietly fighting back. If we remember, week 9, they were sitting at 2-6. They're now at 5-6. Three-game win streak. With the Rams kind of faltering a little bit, they could make some noise here. And it'd be quite interesting. Coming up this week, I talked about Buffalo, New England. Cincinnati against the Giants. Or, I'm sorry, Cincinnati against the Chargers. That'll be a decent game. Not really much else in the AFC. Washington goes to Las Vegas. That'll be that's a decent game. But nothing really else that's crazy. Chicago hosting Arizona isn't a big game. There's not a lot of big games this week. The big game is New England and Buffalo. That's your big game of the week. There's not really much else to say there. So that's where the picks look. That's what the schedule looks like coming up this week. My biggest question, does any team even want to go to the Super Bowl this year? I mean, seriously. You know, the Bills have lost two straight. You know, they've lost the lead in the division. I mean, New England's starting to fight back now. But the Ravens and the Bengals are, I mean, really, those are your AFC teams. New England, Buffalo's on a slide, but Baltimore is they're all right. Cincinnati's decent. The Titans are starting to fall. They've lost two straight. I mean, nobody wants to win the AFC West. So who do you pick? Who do you pick to go to the Super Bowl from the AFC? Honestly, right now it looks like it could be New England. I would say they're probably the hottest team right now in the AFC. And the NFC isn't that much better. Dallas has lost two straight. They sit at 7-4 atop the division. Green Bay's at 9-3, but even they don't look that amazing. Tampa Bay's at 8-3. I mean, and then Arizona. I mean, they're pretty much the team to beat there. So I would say New England's the team to beat right now in the AFC. With Baltimore and Cincinnati not far behind. And I would say in the NFC, you got Green Bay, Arizona, and Tampa Bay. So you got about six teams, really, that are playing decent enough to warrant going to the Super Bowl. Wouldn't it be interesting? Here's a thought for you. Because two of the teams I mentioned, think about it. Wouldn't it be interesting? And I don't want to see it. I'll say that now. I don't want this to be the outcome. And I'm not predicting this to be the outcome. But based on the six teams I just mentioned, you have New England and you have Tampa Bay. Brady against his old team. Brady against Belichick. Brady against Mac Jones. Like I said, I don't want to see it. I don't want that to be the outcome. I'm sick of Tom Brady. I'm sick of seeing him in the Super Bowl. Let's see another team rise up. Honestly, I would love to see Arizona go to the Super Bowl. I don't even want to see Aaron Rodgers in it. But interesting note there. I wanted to talk for a brief second just about the draft order, the current draft order. All right. Now this is based off of after week 12, so it's current. But your top 10, you have Detroit number 1, Houston number 2, Jacksonville number 3. Okay, no shock there. 4 and 5 both belong to the Jets currently. Number 4, they have the pick from Seattle, who's sitting at 3 and 8. So they would have two picks in a row. The next two picks belong to the Giants because the Giants own Chicago's draft pick, first round pick. And then the next two picks belong to the Eagles because the Eagles own Miami's first round pick. And then Carolina rounds out the top 10. So your top 10, Detroit, Houston, Jacksonville, the Jets twice, the Giants twice, the Eagles twice, and then the Panthers. Not to mention the Eagles also have the 14th overall pick. And they have that if Carson Wentz plays 75% of snaps for the Colts, which shouldn't be an issue. But currently the Eagles would have number 8, 9, and 14. Man, that's crazy to me. That really is. I mean, for one, if you're one of these three teams, either New York team or Philadelphia, I mean, you've got some potential to really make some changes on your team. But you also have capital. Especially if you're the Eagles having potentially three first-round picks, you have the ability to really make some noise there, and you can make some trades and bring in some players. We'll see what happens. All right, let's talk about college basketball. We'll do Major League Baseball and college football after the break. So college basketball, let's talk about this for a minute, okay? Now, every year in college basketball, you have parity. Teams are going to lose. It happens. You're not going to have an undefeated team. If you do, it's very rare. I would say probably the favorites. This season, going into it, were probably Gonzaga, UCLA, Duke, maybe Michigan. I would say those would probably be your four teams, your three or four teams. All right. Let's talk about what's happened really in the past 2 weeks. So on the 21st, you have number 6, Purdue, beat number 5, Villanova. Number 17, Tennessee, beat number 18, North Carolina. There have been a lot of good games this year. And I haven't really watched many, but there have been some good games played. Let's see. On Monday, the 22nd, Ohio State upset Seton Hall, ranked 21st. UC Cincinnati upset number 14, Illinois. Let's see. Going forward, Tuesday, the 23rd, Wisconsin upset number 12, Houston in the Maui Invitational. And then Gonzaga beat UCLA by 20 points. Number 1 versus number 2, Gonzaga over UCLA by 20 points. All right. Wednesday, not really much to talk about Wednesday. All right. Thanksgiving, again, not a whole lot to talk about. Iona upset Alabama, number 10 Alabama, by 3 points. All right, Friday the 26th, Dayton upset number 4 Kansas by 1 point. And then Duke upset Gonzaga 84-81. So number 5 Duke beat number 1 Gonzaga. So Gonzaga beats UCLA by 20. Duke beats Gonzaga by 3. All right, so Duke's the new number 1. And then we go all the way to Tuesday the 30th, and Ohio State in the Big Ten ACC Challenge knocks off number one Duke. Now, interesting note, and I didn't know this before. I tried to do a little research so I could have more information. Unfortunately, I didn't find the right kind of information I was looking for. But apparently, the last time, and I'll talk about this a little bit more after the break, but the last time that that team up north beat the Buckeyes, which was 2011, 10 years ago, 3 days later, Ohio State beat Duke. Now this year, that team up north beats Ohio State. 3 days later, Ohio State beats Duke. So let's look back at this game real quick. I just want to verify a few things here. So in 2011, Ohio State was ranked number two and Duke was ranked number three. Ohio State beat Duke by 22 points. That's a lot of points. All right, let's see. Duke was led by Austin Rivers, Mason Plumlee, Seth Curry, Andre Dawkins, Ryan Kelly. Quinn Cook was on the bench. That's a good Duke team. Ohio State was led by William Buford, Aaron Kraft, Jared Solinger, Deshaun Thomas, Lenzel Smith. Jordan Siebert was on the bench. Evan Ravenel was on the bench. Now, that Ohio State team went on to the Final Four that year. Trying to verify that too. So, could that happen this year? Maybe. We'll see. But just interesting things like that. All right. It's not going to what I want it to go to, but I wanted to look back at that real quick. Okay. Real quick before the break, let's look at the Big Ten ACC Challenge. This is a big event every year. The Big Ten won the challenge in 2020 and 2019. ACC holds a 12-8-3 edge going back to 1999. The ACC also leads 144-121 in all ACC Big Ten Challenge games. All right, so let's look at this year and see what happened. So on Monday, Iowa beats Virginia, Illinois beats Notre Dame. Tuesday, Minnesota beats Pitt, Syracuse beats Indiana in double overtime, Purdue beats Florida State, Rutgers beats Clemson, Wake Forest beats Northwestern, Ohio State beats Duke. Wednesday, Michigan State beats Louisville, NC State beats Nebraska, Virginia Tech beats Maryland, Miami beats Penn State, North Carolina beats Michigan, Wisconsin beats Georgia Tech, giving Ohio State the 8-6 win. So last season, Big Ten went 7-5. This year they go, whatever I just said, 8-6. All right, I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening. Welcome back, and we are going to jump right in. There's a lot to cover and not a ton of time. So for those that haven't listened to my podcast before, I know I didn't really give too much of an introduction about this, but I try to keep the podcast right around an hour long. I don't like to go too far over that. There's been episodes, and you'll see it as you scroll through. If you scroll through, there are times where I do go over an hour. There's sometimes where I don't quite make it to an hour. I'm trying to fill it to make sure I get as close to an hour as possible. I'm not at the level to have a 2-hour, 3-hour, 2-hour, 3-hour podcast. You know, I'm not there. So, maybe eventually, hopefully, you know, start having some guests, start having some other people joining me in the podcast. You know, we'll see what happens, but for right now, try to keep it at about an hour. So, gonna jump right in, talk a little bit about baseball, but a lot of this half of the episode is going to be about college football. And we'll talk about, actually, I just got a notification on my phone about some breaking news, so we'll talk about that as well regarding college football. Actually, I should say two breaking news. There's been two different news notes that have come out since I started this podcast, so since I started recording. So I'll cover both of those. But let's talk about Major League Baseball first. So as of midnight, Major League Baseball is officially in lockout mode. The players have officially been locked out. That means they can't contact their teams. They can't go to any of the facilities. Nothing. Like, there's no communication. They are locked out. And I don't know. Really, I guess I should say I don't really know enough to know who's at fault here. You know, in my mind, I want to automatically say that it's the owner's fault. It's Major League Baseball's fault, not the players and the players union. But I don't know. But this CBA, this collective bargaining agreement, was signed in 2016. It's been 5 years. And you're telling me that in 5 years, they couldn't come to an agreement on something? When you hear about things like this, it just makes you really look at it and question, like, what's really going on behind the scenes that they can't come to an agreement in a 5-year time frame? Now, I know A lot can change in 5 years. I get that. But the fact that it literally came down to the wire and then they still couldn't come to an agreement, man, I don't know. You hate to see this kind of thing for anybody's sake, but hopefully it's resolved quickly and we can get back to, you know, what we'd like to talk about in the off season. That's trades, that's signings, that's all of that, free agency. But there's not going to be any of that. They're already talking about the potential that I don't think this will affect the regular season. I don't. I mean, that's a long way to go. We have all the way till the end of March. But spring training could definitely be affected. The minor leagues could definitely be affected by this. And I hope it doesn't come to that. I hope they are able to come to an agreement and get back to doing their thing. But for right now, they're in lockout. But in the short time we had of free agency, I wanted to talk about the signings that did happen. And there's eight signings that were pretty significant. And it really made me wonder, and I'll see if I can pull this up while I'm talking, but I want to go back to 2019, because I know 2018 was kind of a weird year. And then I also want to go back to 2016 when the last collective bargaining agreement happened. But the reason I want to look at these past years is I feel like some of these contracts that have been thrown out are insane. And just at quick glance, it doesn't look like it's really too far out of control. What did I click on here? Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like it's too far out of question here. Oh, whoops. Okay. Okay, so let's talk about let's look back first. If my computer catches up to me. There we go. Oh, it's because I clicked it twice. Okay. Let's look first at 2016. Well, actually, no, let's look at 2019. It's already loaded, so we'll just look at that one first. Okay, 2019. Bryce Harper signed for 13 years, $330 million. Average salary of $25 million. Manny Machado signed with San Diego, 10 years, $300 million. It's $30 million a year. Patrick Corbin, 6 years with Washington. Nathan Eovaldi, 4 years, and on down from there. So really, the only contracts that were over 5 years was Manny Machado and Bryce Harper and Patrick Corbin. Okay. I can actually just use this website here. Let's go to 2016. Update it. Yeah, because this doesn't... This gives me the whole list. No, I don't want to do it that way. So we'll use the same website. Let's look at 2016. Well, now I kind of wish I didn't do that because it wants me to sign in and I don't want to sign in. Okay. Let's try this again. That's disappointing. But 2016. Let's see. Most of these are 1 year. So 5 years. Aroldis Chapman with the Yankees for 5 years, $86 million. Ian Desmond with the Rockies, 5 years. Dexter Fowler with the Cardinals for 5 years. Kenley Jensen stayed with the Dodgers for 5 years. So in 2016, nothing really crazy. Would it have been 2015 maybe? I don't think so. Well, while I've got this up, let me look at 2015 real quick just to see. I don't think. Wai-Yin Chen with the Marlins, 5 years. Johnny Cueto, 6 years. Chris Davis, 7 years. Zach Greinke, 6 years. Yeah, here we go. Okay, Jason Hayward, 8 years with the Cubs. David Price, 7 years with the Red Sox. So there's a little bit more on there. Okay, so the reason I wanted to look at that is because I felt like, man, these contracts that were coming out, I just felt like were coming out hot and coming out heavy. And so that's why I wanted to look at that. So let's talk about what has happened. First off, the Mets and the Rangers are trying to make a big change to their rosters here. All right, let's talk about the Mets first. So the Mets go out and get Starling Marte. 4 years, $78 million. And then they pull off Max Scherzer, 3 years, $130 million. It's a pretty good way to overhaul your roster. So they let Noah Syndergaard go. He goes to the Angels. They replace him with Max Scherzer. So now you have Max Scherzer and you have Jacob deGrom. Now, let me say something about Max Scherzer's career. In Detroit, he had Justin Verlander with him for a little while. In Washington, he had Steven Strasburg with him for a little while. Well, really the whole time. In LA, he had Clayton Kershaw. And now, in New York, he's got Jacob deGrom. Now, obviously, they don't affect each other because they play, they're all pitchers, right? They don't play the same games, the same day, you know, all that. But just interesting to note, like the teams he's gone to have all had an ace. And then they bring in him, who is a I think I saw three-time Cy Young winner. Like, that's crazy. So he's back in the NL East. Unfortunate for my Braves. But we'll see how it works for the Mets. Because we know the Mets, they will find a way to mess it up, as they always do. All right, let's talk about Texas. So Texas goes out and gets Marcus Semien, who was in the MVP race, 7 years, $175 million. Then they go out and get Corey Seager, 10 years, $325 million. And those are the contracts that kind of got me thinking, like, wow, like there's some heavy contracts coming out. I mean, they just spent $500 million on half of their infield. But man, what a half of the infield they're going to have. I mean, we haven't seen something like that in Texas since the days of Adrian Beltre and Elvis Andrus. And while I think I would take Adrian Beltre in his prime over Corey Seager in his prime, I feel like I would take Marcus Semien over Elvis Andrus. So it'll be interesting to see how Texas plays out there in the West, becoming competitive with Houston and Oakland and teams like that. All right, other deals that were made. Detroit is another one that's making splashes. I almost forgot about them. But they go out and get Eduardo Rodriguez. I can't talk. 5 years, $77 million. So help their pitching staff. And then they go out and get Javi Baez. 6 years, $140 million. Now, say what you want about Javi Baez. Did I like him as a Reds fan? Me being a Reds fan, did I like him being on the Cubs? I didn't like him on the Cubs, but, and I'm pretty sure I said this on an episode at some point. Actually, I know I did. I liked the energy that he brought. Specifically, I think I said it after the game where he got ejected. He caused that big scuffle. And I talked about it compared to Castellanos standing over the player, standing over the catcher, all that. I liked the energy that he brought. I like that about baseball. I like when a player has a lot of energy and excitement like that. Now, there's times where there's a time and a place. And I'm pretty sure I said that at the time as well. But if you ask me right now, and if you would have asked me back at the midway point of the season, would I have taken Javi Baez on the Reds? Absolutely. 100% without a doubt. I'm still holding out hope that once this lockout is over, the Reds go out and sign a catcher. I messed that up bad. I really hope they go out and they sign a shortstop. Not sure where catcher came from. I really hope that the Reds, when this lockout is over, go out and sign a shortstop. Because they need one. Javi Baez is obviously gone now, but Carlos Correa is still there. Trevor Story is still there. I'll take either one of them. 100%. But Detroit making a splash. Javi Baez now goes out there and plays with Miggy. Toronto signs Kevin Gausman, 5 years, $110 million. And Robbie Ray goes to Seattle, 5 years, $115 million. So some big deals going out there. That's six deals that are over 5 years. There are 5 years or longer. That's pretty good. All right, let's turn our attention to college football because there's a lot to get to here. All right, let me go ahead and just get this out there and talk about rivalry week. For whatever reason, I can't say that word. But last week, let's talk about last week's games. Okay, I anybody that knows me knows how big of a Buckeye fan I am. Obviously, I was not happy about the outcome. And I don't know if I've talked about it much on this podcast. I don't think I did. But if you would have asked me all season what the weak point of Ohio State's team was, I would tell you the defense, which pains me to say because Ohio State has always been a knockdown, drag-out defensive team. You know, we've had guys like A.J. Hawk, Chris Spielman, you know, Anthony Schlegel, Bobby Carpenter, James Laurinaitis, Marcus Freeman, who we'll talk about in a minute. We've had guys like Mike Doss and Chris Gamble. Bradley Roby, Jeffrey Okuda, not to even mention Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, Chase Young, Cam Hayward. I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, really, you could just go read the entire national championship team from 2002, the defense. Mike, yeah, just go look at all those names. And from there on, literally, we've had defensive teams. And while, yeah, it was awesome this year at times to see Ohio State put up massive amounts of points, after living through the trestle years where it's trestle ball and run it up the gut, and, you know, Beanie Wells and Maurice Claret and Carlos Hyde and J.K. Dobbins and, you know, guys like that, just run the ball, pound it up their gut or pound it down their throat, pound it right up the middle. It was nice to see games where we're airing it out. We had three receivers that almost had 1,000 yards each. Like, that's awesome. But it doesn't matter how many points you score, and I'll say this about any team. This is why the Big 12 doesn't win championships. Folks, if you're a Big 12 fan, this is why you don't win championships. Because you're offensive-minded. You're all about putting up all the points. It doesn't matter how many points you win or how many points you score if you can't stop the other team from scoring points. Right? There's a reason LSU and Alabama and Florida and teams like that win the championship year after year after year. And it's not because they're scoring massive amounts of points. It's because they have defensive players that can stop the run, can block the pass, challenge the quarterback. Man, that's one thing that I have said with my buddies. I feel like almost every game this year, there's no pressure on the quarterback. And then to go from last week where we shut down Kenneth Walker from Michigan State, you know, best top running back in the country, but then we just get ran all over by Haskins. Ah, it's frustrating. They just wanted it more. Now, there's been some bulletin board material put out there by both Jim Harbaugh and his assistant coaches that Ohio State better have on their bulletin board. As they come into the locker room, as they leave their locker room, there should be things that you can see. These quotes from this other team that fires you up so this never happens again. Let's go another 10 plus years. But you can't do that if you don't go recruit defensive players. Stop recruiting quarterbacks. We have enough. We were in this problem a few years ago. That's why Joe Burrow transferred to LSU, went on to win a national championship, went on to win a Heisman. The last time Ohio State won a Heisman was 2006. 15 years ago. And wow, that pains me to say that it was 15 years, but that made me feel old. I watched Troy Smith play. I was in college with him. And now here we are again. We have another quarterback that's transferring because he's not getting playing time in Jack Miller. Now, Jack Miller kind of sealed his own fate with his legal issues. But we don't need four quarterbacks in 1 year. We had Stroud, we had Jack Miller, we had McCord, we had Quinn Ewers who came a year early. We didn't need that. Now, I'm really hoping Quinn Ewers is the next greatest thing. I hope he is. But now we've gone and we've signed a four-star quarterback for next year. And why? Quarterback is not the problem here. Wide receiver was not the problem here. Running back was not the problem here. The problem was the defense. Ryan Day. I know there's no chance you're ever going to listen to this, but go recruit defensive players and sign and hire a defensive coordinator. All right. I'm gonna get off that subject now because man, it fires me up. All right, let's talk about this week, championship week. And I'm almost positive I'm gonna go longer than an hour today because that went on for far longer than I thought it was going to. But championship week. All right, we got the ACC. It's a joke. It doesn't matter. Pittsburgh against Wake Forest means nothing. All right, cool. Let's move on. Pac-12, Utah, Oregon. Again, means absolutely nothing. Neither team's going to the playoff. Let's move on. Actually, I will say this. Now that Ohio State has lost, if Oregon beats Utah, there's a very good chance we get a rematch against them in the Rose Bowl. Okay, moving on. Big Ten Championship. Michigan, Iowa. This is a big deal for that team up north. If they win, they're in the playoff. They have a chance to go to a national championship. If they lose, Big Ten's out. Okay, moving on. Notre Dame doesn't play this week. Some things fall, right? Some chips fall. Teams lose. They could find themselves back in the playoff. I really hope not. I don't want to see Notre Dame in the playoff. I definitely don't want to see a coachless Notre Dame in the playoff. Let's move on. Big 12. Oklahoma State, Baylor. Oklahoma State wins. They're in the playoff. Baylor wins. I mean, there's a small chance they make the playoff, but I really doubt it. All right. American Athletic Conference. American Athletic Conference. Cincinnati, Houston. Cincinnati wins. They're in. They lose. They're definitely not. And that brings us, I believe, to the last conference, which is the SEC. Georgia, Alabama. It's the game everyone's been waiting all year for. Georgia wins. Well, I'll say this. No matter what Georgia does, they're going to the playoff. Win or lose, they're in. Alabama needs to win to be in. I'm really hoping Georgia wins. Bulldog fans, you need to show out and show up and support your team. Cheer them on. They need that victory. I do not want to see Alabama in the playoff this year. I don't think they deserve it. But we'll see. So what am I saying? Your top four teams right now, Georgia, Michigan, Alabama, Cincinnati. Oklahoma State is right there. Notre Dame is right there. So that's six teams. But man, can you see the chaos that is about to happen? Six teams, I just said. All right. Let's say Georgia wins. Okay, there's one. So Alabama's gone. All right. So that leaves you with four more teams for three slots. So what happens if Michigan loses? And Notre Dame doesn't play. So Michigan loses, Notre Dame's in. All right. So now we've got two teams in, Georgia and Notre Dame. And we have three teams left. We have two teams left. We have UC and we have Oklahoma State. No, I'm missing somebody. Hold on. Let me do this again. We have Georgia, Alabama, Michigan, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame. Right? I'm not missing anybody, am I? Pac-12, ACC, Big Ten. No. Okay. It's those six teams. But, okay, so Georgia wins. So I have six teams. Georgia wins. Alabama's out. That's two of the six. That's four teams left for three slots. Right? Let's say Michigan loses to Iowa. Notre Dame's in. All right? That leaves us two teams with two spots. Right? That leaves us with Oklahoma State and Cincinnati. What happens if one of them loses? Even bigger question. What happens if both of them lose? Folks, there's a chance. Houston could beat Cincinnati. Baylor could beat Oklahoma State. Iowa could beat Michigan. None of them outside of Baylor really has a chance. I mean, has a chance of making it. And Baylor is even questionable. But we're looking at 2007 kind of chaos, right? man, it's crazy, and it's about to get real crazy here. I'm in it for the craziness. I saw one post, even after Ohio State got obliterated last week, I saw a post about the chance that Ohio State could still somehow squeak in. Now, they need all that stuff I just mentioned to happen, but I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't think we're going to get that level of chaos, but hey, I'm all for it. Whether Ohio State makes it or not. Honestly, after last week, Ohio State doesn't deserve to make it. And the way their defense is playing, I really don't want to see them play some of these other teams. Mainly Georgia. Now, folks, I'm telling you right now, Georgia is winning in the championship this year. You can write it down. You can take it to Vegas. Do what you want with it. Georgia is winning the national championship. There's not a team out there that can stop them. Now, if I'm wrong after this week, I'll come back and admit I'm wrong. But that's my pick. All right, let's talk about the coaching carousel. Because, man, I hope you're on board because it's speeding up. And the effect it's having. All right, so not even sure where to start anymore. But Lincoln, let's start with USC. They snag Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma. It really makes you wonder. Oklahoma announces they're going to the SEC in a few years. Lincoln Riley keeps saying, oh, he's staying. But bolts for the Pac-12. A safe conference, right? You're going to face the likes of Oregon, UCLA, Arizona State, Utah, Washington sometimes. You're not really facing tough teams. Very similar to what Oklahoma's been facing in the Big 12 for the past few years, right? Very soft schedule. But here in a few years, Oklahoma goes to the SEC. Now you're facing Alabama, Auburn, LSU, Florida, if they ever get back, Texas A&M. It almost makes Lincoln Riley look a little scared. Now the guy's 55-10. He's 1-3 in bowl games. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm not a huge Lincoln Riley fan. Never really have been. Hey, I was happy for him. You know, Bob Stoops brought him on and, you know, pretty much immediately made him his successor. Cool. Cool story. Just not a big fan of him. I don't see the big deal about Oklahoma. And I haven't. I've been saying that for a long time now. All right. Then we have the shocker. Brian Kelly leaves for LSU. Brian Kelly is 283 wins, 97 losses, and 2 ties in his career. 17-10 in bowl games. He's the winningest coach, the winningest active coach currently in college football. He's also the winningest coach in Notre Dame history. I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere. But never has won a national championship. Notre Dame was his dream job, or so he said. But then bolts for LSU. Now, it's weird opposite standards here. You know, Lincoln Riley runs from the SEC. Brian Kelly runs to the SEC. So you have different sides of this thing. And then the other big signing, I mean, which really isn't that big, is Billy Napier goes to Florida from Louisiana. Cool. Now let's talk about the breaking news. The rumor is that Marcus Freeman is set to become Notre Dame's new head coach, being promoted from defensive coordinator. Marcus Freeman comes from Cincinnati, has been with Notre Dame for 1 year as their defensive coordinator. Looks like he'll be the next Notre Dame coach. Honestly, shocking to me. I thought for sure Luke Fickell was going. I did. I thought for sure he was a goner. He was going to Notre Dame. So you UC fans, I guess you're welcome. We'll see what happens. All right, let me take another short break. I'll be right back, and we'll finish out this conversation. And I'm back. Let's finish out this conversation. So, honestly, I thought for sure Luke Fickell was going to Notre Dame. I had a lot of people telling me I was crazy, telling me it wasn't happening, but, and I understood their point, their viewpoint. You know, Luke Fickell was built a great, he's pretty much built, rebuilt, well, I will say built, the UC football program, right? And now, you know, he's going to be taking them to, from a group of five school to a power five school, right? Going to the Big 12 here in a couple of years. You know, he's built a really good thing. So why leave that? But sometimes the grass appears greener on the other side. More prestigious program. Let's come on. Even with UC going to the Big 12, UC, Notre Dame, there's a big difference in prestige there. So that's not happening, it appears, unless, you know, a curveball comes in. But, yeah, so honestly, I was looking at this, you know, Notre Dame, the candidates I had written down, Luke Fickell. I mean, the reports I read said they weren't naming an interim coach because they were literally waiting for Fickell. And so I guess Fickell must have said no because they moved on pretty quick. But the other couple names I had written down were just rumors I had heard. Urban Meyer was one. I didn't think Urban would come back to Notre Dame, but literally what I've told several people in the past couple days is you never know from day to day what Urban Meyer's going to do. Look, I like the guy at Ohio State. I respect what he's done in college football, but the dude's flaky. Let's be honest here. He is flaky. So it wouldn't have surprised me. And then Matt Campbell from Iowa State. I mean, Matt Campbell, I don't know how I would feel if I was an Iowa State fan. I mean, I honestly, if I'm an Iowa State fan, I'm probably just, I understand because I'm an Iowa State fan. But Matt, from what I read, it sounded like Matt Campbell literally came out and said, hey, if Notre Dame offers me, I'm going. Like, I'd be glad to come there. It's like he was begging Notre Dame to hire him away from Iowa State, but I don't know. Those were the three names. So I saw nothing about Freeman being the one to go. So as far as Oklahoma goes, there's been several names. Mario Cristobal from Oregon. You know, that's always a big name that goes around. Josh Heupel, I think that's how you pronounce his name, Tennessee's coach, was actually Oklahoma's quarterback when they won their last national championship in 2000. But he's also only been in Tennessee for 1 year. So would he do, would he pull a Lane Kiffin? Would he go and leave them after a year? Who knows? Brent Venables, Clemson's defensive coordinator. That's always a name that's out there. Matt Rhule, Carolina Panthers in the NFL, hit their head coach. Would he come back to college? And then Shane Beamer from South Carolina. Also, I've heard reports of potentially Mark Stoops. Pretty sure Mark Stoops either just signed an extension or said he's not leaving, which you can only take that with a grain of salt. But the report I saw recently was it looks like Shane Beamer is most likely going to become the next head coach at Oklahoma. Nothing set in stone, nothing signed, but that's the latest rumor is that he's projected to be the next coach. All right, so what does this mean for the players? What does this mean for the programs? What does this mean for the transfer portal? And let me say for Oklahoma, it means a lot. It means a lot. They have probably been hit the hardest out of the transfer portal. So let's go back. Let's just go back to the beginning of November. I'm just curious to see the names that have popped up on here. I won't go back before that because I mean that's pretty far. But I just want to kind of glance through here and see if any big schools. Florida State redshirt freshman quarterback Chuba Purdy, who is the younger brother of Iowa State's star quarterback Brock Purdy, was a four-star recruit, part of the 2020 recruiting class, started one game as a freshman last season. He entered the transfer portal. LSU senior quarterback Miles Brennan on November 3rd announced his intent to enter the portal. He was the starting quarterback last year before suffering a season-ending injury. He was in competition this season, but then sustained another long-term injury. So yeah, a lot of injury issues there. Alabama junior cornerback Marcus Banks, a former four-star recruit, has been a backup and a special teams contributor. He entered the transfer portal. I don't think it really ramps up until after Riley announces he's leaving. So I should see that here in a minute, because I'm just about to that day. It's been a lot of players that have entered the portal. I didn't know that this many players did, honestly. Former Ohio State safety Amir Reap. He was dismissed last year after being arrested on rape and kidnapping charges. No surprise there. Dude's not coming back to Ohio State. So, and honestly, he probably won't play again. Hey, Michigan State redshirt junior safety Michael Dowell enters transfer portal. Played both nickelback and safety. Let's see. Consensus four-star prospect from perennial power Lakewood, Ohio. So he's from Ohio. Hey, Ohio State. There's a safety for you. Okay, here's where it really kicks off, I believe. What day was this? The 29th of November. So we've got a whole list of players enter the transfer portal on November 29th. I'm just trying to glance through here for the notable ones. I mean, there might be a lot more notable ones than I'm going to say, but I'm going to try to give you the ones that I at least recognize or am familiar with. And there's honestly not terribly many. The big one on the 29th was Spencer Rattler. So preseason Heisman favorite. For Oklahoma, destined to lead them to a national championship. He's now transferring. And then also Oklahoma redshirt sophomore wide receiver Jaden Hazelwood also entered the transfer portal. The next day, we have three Auburn players, four Auburn players, Oklahoma junior tight end Austin Stogner. So there's another Oklahoma player. Several Vanderbilt players. All right, December 1st, Oklahoma junior wide receiver Theo Weiss enters the transfer portal. And that catches us up. So a lot of Oklahoma players now looking to transfer. The notification I got when I started the podcast, Adrian Martinez, quarterback for Notre Dame. Or quarterback for Nebraska, has entered the transfer portal. So there's another name entering the portal, and it looks like that's going to be a significant deal. Oklahoma also loses number two overall quarterback Malachi Nelson, who had committed to them for next season. Not next season, the following season, 2023. He's the number two player in the country behind Arch Manning. He decommits from Oklahoma, ends up following Lincoln Riley, and commits to USC. So big news there too as well. Oklahoma getting hit hard on the recruiting trail. So more to come on that as we get into the off season and everything else. Looking forward to next week's episode and see what kind of craziness comes from the end of the college football season. This upcoming Sunday, we are 3 days away from the playoff committee announcing who is going to the playoff. So it's going to be insane. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be exciting, and we'll see what happens. But thank you for listening to this episode. I hope you liked it. Make sure to check out my Instagram page, Rounding Third Sports. Check for the logo that I use for this podcast. Drop me a like, drop me a comment, drop me a follow, drop me a, just drop in and tell me what you think. If there's something you want to hear my thoughts on, let me know, and I will do my best to include that. More to come as the days go on. Again, here in the next few weeks, I'll be doing my College Game Day episode. I finally got all of my statistics for that saved and updated. I just have to update these last couple of weeks, which won't take long at all, and then go from there. But yeah, that's coming up. You know, just like I did this past summer with the greatest baseball team of all time tournament, we'll be doing another one for, I believe the next one is going to be the NFL. So more to come on that. I don't know. I haven't set a time for that yet. Most likely, probably thinking May, April, May timeframe to help cover if I miss any weeks. And then in July, I will probably do another tournament, as I will be most likely out of town again for a week. So looking forward to having those tournaments and seeing what happens there. If you're curious about what I'm talking about, go back and listen to my, to the first episode of the greatest MLB team of all time tournament episode. And I explain everything on there. But yeah, thank you again for watching. Obviously this podcast is nothing without you listening to it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. If you do wish to, there is an option to subscribe. It is $5 a month. There are previous episodes that are subscriber only. So anything you do, it's not a requirement, but it would be greatly appreciated. I believe there's something else I was going to push on here too, but I don't remember what now. But yeah, if it's something you're interested in, make sure to subscribe. That just helps me to be able to put more into this podcast. I've been tinkering around with Anchor's transition sound. So maybe in the next couple weeks, I'll start adding some sound effects, maybe before the episode or during, something like that. I don't know. I got to figure out more about that stuff. But again, thank you for watching. Have a great week. Have a great weekend. And look forward to the next episode. See ya.